Welcome to Law Subscribed. This is your dedicated news source for all things subscriptions and the law. My name is Matthew Kurbis. I'm the subscription attorney, and I believe subscriptions can help bridge the access to justice gap and incentivize attorneys to modernize and scale their practice like never before. In this episode, I interview Lael Sturm. Lael runs a subscription business called Augmenter and is an expert at marketing and outsourcing. Lael shares his pandemic journey on how he had to pivot his marketing agency using a fee-for-service model to a virtual assistant business that uses the subscription model. Lael is not a lawyer, which makes him much better at having good business sense, and I'm grateful he came on the pod to share that with me and with you, my listeners. I'm releasing videos of my podcast to all of my Substack subscribers. Subscribe for free at www.lawsubscribed.com. Thank you to my sponsors, 650 and Gavel. Links to both in the show notes, more on them later. And remember to use the code LAWSUBSCRIBED when signing up. It lets them know you found out about them from the podcast. You get 10% off, and it supports the show. Another way to support the show is to share it with someone you know. This podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only, and nothing said is legal, ethical, or financial advice. Without further delay, here's the episode. Lael Sturm, thank you for coming on the Law Subscribed podcast. While we've had a chance to chat, go ahead and introduce yourself to my listeners.
Yeah, thanks so much, Matthew. My name is Lael Sturm. I'm based in Northern California. I live in Marin County, north of San Francisco, and I run a virtual assistant agency. So what we do is we place real life human assistants, not artificial intelligence yet, into other organizations to support busy executives, busy business founders with things like executive administrative services, but also sales and marketing support. Yeah, that's a little bit about what I do. I'm not sure it's exactly who I am, but it's a starting point.
Well, let's then learn a little bit about who you are. First of all, I want to let longtime listeners of the podcast know, we got introduced through a friend of the show, Steve Fretzen, who's been a guest on the podcast. So that's how we got introduced. And of course, because Fretzen knows what I'm all about, I'm just going to hide the ball just for a little bit longer. But you guys could all probably guess why I've had Lael on the podcast. But before we get there, the company's Augmenter, how did that company start and why?
Yeah. Thanks for asking. So for decades, 20 plus years, I ran a digital marketing agency. So we did things like digital ads on Google and social media posting and that kind of thing. And it was a good business. And it was always a distributed business. So I always had team members in other parts of the country. And we always had admin overseas. So the back office was always overseas. And this model worked for us. So when the pandemic sent most people home, we were used to working from home. It wasn't disruptive for our business. That was already our model. We had been paying for Zoom for, 5 years at that point. Mm-hmm. So we had that system in place. And what we encountered as an agency, the sort of panic over what the world might look like after the lockdown was put in place, caused a lot of our clients to clamp down on their budgets, stall their marketing campaigns. And then, as you know, there was this great resignation that happened where people were having a hard time keeping their team staffed. So marketing people were quitting or they were having a hard time hiring new marketing people. And that impacted my marketing business because we couldn't get the campaigns approved to actually deliver great work and show real results. And I had this sort of, bizarre retention idea that just popped into my head. I thought, hey, you know what? If they're understaffed, we've got extra capacity on the admin side. Maybe we could just loan out our overseas assistants for a couple hours a month just to get the process moving at the client side so that the campaigns are approved, so that they launch, so that we can show real return on investment. And we tried it. We offered to a few of our good clients. We said, hey, do you want a couple hours of an assistant's time to help you clear some of your marketing backlog, address the fact that your marketing team is short-staffed? And enough of them took us up on the offer that it became like a kind of a separate part of our business. We were giving it away for free at the time, but we had clients coming back to us saying, oh my God, this is incredible. Could we hire somebody full-time? Could you help us find somebody overseas that could be a marketing assistant or a sales assistant or an executive assistant? And we thought, sure, why not? We'll just sell this alongside our other services. So we were selling, Google ad campaign management and virtual assistants to support a marketing team. And it grew into kind of a meaningful part of the business. And it grew to a point where it got to be a little bit confusing externally in our sales messaging. People would say, hey, what's going on here? Are you a marketing agency or are you a staffing agency? Which one is it? These two things make no sense together. And then I would launch into the story that I just told you. And I'd go through that whole thing as a part of my sales pitch. Mm-hmm. And that was pretty distracting. And ultimately, it left the prospects sort of unsure what to do with us. So we're marketers. We took some marketing medicine and said, okay, we got to clean up this message. The decision was made to split off the virtual assistant agency into a standalone thing, have the digital agency be its own thing. So now it's two different brands. So, you know, both of those businesses still exist, but the virtual assistant agency has gotten so much traction. People have really gotten their heads around the fact that you can work remotely. You can have a resource in a different part of the country or a different part of the world from where you are and still have a very effective working relationship. So that business has grown really nicely into really what I do full time. So I'm still an owner in the marketing agency, but I don't spend much of my time doing strategy over there. I'm focused on virtual assistants.
You know, that comment on Zoom really stood out to me of that, like, you know, you knew what Zoom was when the pandemic hit. We had, as a law firm, I was still at my last firm at the time, and we had just started to use Zoom for like depositions of experts who were like in different states other than Illinois. And it was only like a few months before the pandemic hit. And at the time, I remember one of the people we had on staff, she was like, oh, our court reporters must be raking it in now. I was like, what are you talking about? She's like, well, they have this Zoom tool and I hear everybody talking about it on the news. I was like, our court reporters who we use don't own Zoom. They didn't invent Zoom. They just knew about the tool and helped facilitate the use of it. I mean, people just had no idea, but you guys obviously did. I'm curious to know, because we're going to get into how you're making money and how you're charging clients with Augmentor. What was your business model, or what is the business model? Maybe it's changed though. For the marketing company at the time, because it sounds like you were trying to solve a problem because you weren't making money when people stopped doing their marketing. So I'm just curious to know, how did you charge your clients, or how do you charge your clients who hire that marketing company?
Yeah. So there were two models. So, you know, the two models, they're pretty common in the advertising and marketing world. One of them is fee for services. You know, you pay us and we'll do this thing for you. We'll create a campaign or, you know, do some content creation or whatever the challenge is. And that was good for smaller clients who didn't have big budgets, didn't have deep pockets, weren't looking to, you know, make a super significant investment in marketing. For bigger clients, and by bigger, I mean, you know, $100,000 a month minimum ad spend across, you know, Google and Facebook properties, maybe LinkedIn or Twitter or something like that. The bigger clients pay what's called percentage of spend. So, you know, if they've got a budget of $100,000 a month, they might be paying $10,000 to $15,000 a month in fees to have that budget managed. And that's pretty typical. You see that in, you know, across the ad industry. For major advertisers, you know, Pepsi's putting an ad on the Super Bowl or something like that. They're typically paying some sort of percentage of spend for what they call media buying. So in our case, if you're not spending money on advertising, you're not paying fees. So, you know, in many ways, our biggest clients stopped paying us because they put a freeze on the spends or because the ads weren't approved to run. So it became a problem.
And yet in hindsight, we know that the companies who continued to spend actually did phenomenal, right, with marketing, because all these other companies stopped marketing. And so like that was the time to do it. And I bring this up because the subscription model would have forced their hand, the client's hand, into continuing to market because they would have been under contract on a certain amount per month. And that's so somewhere in between fee for service or a percentage for I'm spending X amount a month on marketing anyway, that subscription model would have forced them and it would have benefited them probably in the long run and you. So bringing this all back around to the subscription model being probably the best business model.
Yeah.
I think we've hit the ball long enough. Augmentor, how does Augmentor make money?
Yeah, thanks for asking. Obviously, there's a reason that I'm a guest on this podcast. We're subscription-based. So it's a little bit different the way we think about our fees from, you know, how maybe other agencies would, or how you would perhaps pay an assistant in your office or even virtually if you were just to hire them directly. So we do flat monthly fees. And the flat monthly fees are for either a part-time assistant or a full-time assistant. Those are the two models that we have. None of it's project-based. None of it's hourly. None of it is, there's no overages. There's nothing outside of that framework. You're either paying for a part-time assistant or a full-time assistant on a monthly basis. And those monthly flat fees serve a couple of purposes. One, they're super easy to understand. So a client comes through the door, they know what they're looking at. They know what they're budgeting for. There's not going to be any surprises. Two, it allows us to guarantee our assistants a livable wage. So we know that we can pay them because we know how much money we're going to be earning through the engagement. Finally, I think maybe the most interesting thing from my perspective is we're not trying to rack up hours. It's not about how many hours we can work for a client. Of course, we're tracking the hours. That's an important metric for us to manage our business. But we're not nickel and diming the client with it. We're not hammering them over the head with, okay, this month you were this many hours. You know, next month, let's budget this many hours. Like, it's a conversation that we don't have to have. You know what you're in for. We're going to try to over-deliver on the actual work. Sure, the hours are going to be met, and we're still employers, and we're thinking about, you know, part-time is 20 hours a week. Full-time is 40 hours a week. There's a number of hours that you need to expect somebody to show up and be available as your assistant. But if they work 23 hours that week, you're not getting hit with an overage. We're just trying to do the work that you've assigned them and exceed your expectations in terms of deliverables on time and better than expected.
Right. And look, so some months may go a little over, some months may go a little under, because that company or that firm or whomever might not have 20 hours of work for that person. But as long as every month, it sounds like to me that they're delivering quality outcomes or value for whatever the outsourced, you know, tasks are that they're being assigned, it doesn't matter. And then at least as a company, on the other side of it, as one of your clients, it's easier for them to manage and budget, right? Like, so it's easy for you to, I mean, you did kind of say that, but I mean, like, you know, if I have to think about how many hours and tracking, you know, this virtual assistant's hours, like now I'm spending time managing that, yeah. Right? And it's not one of the things that you'd think to outsource to the VA that you hire to manage, you know, it's like a snake eating its tail at that point. Because then what are they spending their time on? Not anything that creates you value. Because when we manage hours, we're not creating value for ourselves or for our customers or our clients, right?
That's right. That's exactly so, right. And we're in the time-saving business, you know? So the last thing we want to do is give you something else to suck up your time. And, you know, separate from the pricing model, one of the things we include in your flat monthly fee is a manager, a dedicated manager on our team who's going to oversee that assistant's work to further free you up. You don't have to worry about what that person is doing with their time. You don't have to, you know, you don't have to spend extra time invested in management because we provide that.
Yeah. Yeah. That is definitely something that I've not heard yet. I hear advertisements for VA companies all the time, or I get pitched on them, but I definitely haven't heard of that. But I, you know, the subscription model lends itself so well to being able to account for that, because if you could count on recurring revenue every month or year, depending on how the contracts are set up, you know, that helps you figure out how do I make my business more efficient too, right?
Yeah.
I do wonder though, then, you know, like what sort of offerings in terms of length of times are you having your VAs, like whether full-time or part-time, because those are the two different tiers, I guess you could have. Are you letting your customers do month to month, quarterly, annually? Like how do you enter into contracts like that?
Yeah, great question. So our engagements start with a 60-day commitment. So you're in for 60 days. When you agree to work with us, you give us 60 days to win your heart. Okay. And we're gonna spend every minute of that 60 days going over the top to impress you, because our goal is that at the end of that 60 days, you look back and you say, oh my God, this is incredible. Why in the world would I stop? This is the best thing I've ever done. I wish I had done it sooner. And seriously, anything less than that is a failure on our part. Like that, we're looking for that level of passionate engagement and affection for this service. Beyond that, we ask for 30 days notice. There's no commitment beyond that. So every month, it's up to us to over-deliver and keep you satisfied.
Huge thing that you just said there, right? Like any subscription business, be they lawyer or VA staffing company or whatever, like that is the power of month-to-month subscriptions because it gives the client or the customer the freedom to like to be like, I can leave whenever I want, right? Yeah. I'm not locked into a long-term contract, which if you put yourselves into the shoes of the consumer, that's what you want. You don't want to be locked into a long-time contract.
Right.
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 And then the onus is on us to deliver to keep people subscribed. I've been doing this now for, I'm getting close to 2 years, having a exclusive subscription business. I do offer add-on flat fees to certain level subscribers, but I do have pure subscription plays, just like what you offer. And something that I found, and I didn't know that this was going to be something that I would have found when I got started. So I'm curious to know if you've seen this and what your opinion is on it, is I do month-to-month exclusively in part because I don't think I could do annual contracts and like be able to keep the fee for like legal ethics reasons. But what I found is that every time that charge comes through, because I charge them at the start of the month, not at the end of the month, I guess that would be another question for you, is when they've already paid you at the start of the month, they're like, well, shoot, like I got to use this guy. I got to use this person. Right. So they send, I get most of my work assignments for my clients because I'm just outsourced legal. Like that's all I am to my clients. I have the same exact business model. Don't, I outsource all your legal to me so you don't have to worry about it. I'm like a virtual legal provider, right?
Yeah.
Like what you
exactly.
are. So I get a bunch of assignments for my clients at the start of the month when they make their payment because they want to get their money's worth. And so it's a great reminder to them to be like, hey, let's make sure we put them to work because we just paid them. So we want to get our money's worth. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I love it. It keeps them engaged. You know, it keeps them involved in the service that you're providing. We're the same. We charge at the start of the month. And, you know, ours doesn't work the same way that yours does because most of the work that our assistants are doing for our clients is ongoing. Mm-hmm. It's really a mix between, hey, every day come in and confirm the next day's appointments and, you know, check for messages from clients and follow up invoices and, you know, prepare the social media posting calendar. So these are things that they do somewhat unsupervised. They do them on their own. They've been trained and are a part of the client's team, and they just know what work needs to get done. And then the other part of it is, oh no, there's an emergency, you know, assistant, I need you to book me a trip to Miami because my customer there is, you know, needs my attention or whatever. So the work doesn't tend to come in at the beginning of the month, like your example does. But yeah, the payment at the beginning of the service month, which isn't always the beginning of a month. It might, you know, might be the 15th of the month. It could be any time, but it's the beginning of the service month is definitely a reminder to make sure that you're getting as much value. And we often time the manager calls. So the manager on our team who's supervising the assistant, they'll set up check-in calls with the client to coincide around the rebill date to make sure that all their needs are met, that, you know, there's nothing new coming down the pipeline that's going to require additional training, or if there is, that we're prepared for it. You know, we'll ask questions about what software and tools they're using or thinking about using or switching to. We'll ask for additional tasks or additional areas where we can support them. You know, we're trying to increase the value, and that rebill date is a great time to actually check in and say, hey, how can we make this worth your while?
We got so excited about so many things that I still have some background questions to ask you, believe it or not. So,
sure, yeah.
So like, you know, when you had this other business that you was forming and then it split off to be its own thing, at what point were you like, well, you know what's a better way to charge for this is subscription? Like, did you start doing hourly? Like, did you start doing fee for service? Like, at what point and like, what was the impetus for like, we're going to try subscription with this thing?
Yeah. So we were always subscription for the virtual assistant business. It's just much simpler. So, you know, as we sort of found ourselves in this other business. So it was a little bit like, you know, building the train while you're already on the train tracks. The thing was moving. We had clients, we had engagements. To some extent, we had clients before we were even charging for it because we were loaning out our assistants' time. It just made sense. It just was the easy way to do it, is just to say, okay, you know, we're just going to do monthly fees. Super easy to convey to our clients, super easy for us to account for, easy for them to account for. Makes it really straightforward when you're, you know, reconciling at the end of the month to figure out, you know, what your costs were relative to your revenue. There's just less variability. So, you know, I've got a finance degree. I went to Columbia Business School. I can do hard math, but I don't necessarily want to do hard math, you know, so I'm not looking for ways to complicate things. I really just want to make it super easy for everybody involved. I want it to be easy for the clients. I want it to be easy for my team. I want it to be easy for the bookkeeper. Just want it to make sense.
And subscription accomplishes all of those things.
It really does.
But my following up though, still on that, is like, was it, you know, like, in what way had you been exposed to the model before? Like, and then how did you set out? Like, did you listen to a podcast? Did you read a book? Did you take a course? Was it just like, this is just, it's a accumulation of just life and education experiences that you just sort of just put it down on paper or typed it up and you were like, you know what? This is just the best thing. Like, where did that come from? Was there like a light bulb moment kind of a thing?
I wish there was. I wish there was something that I could point to and say, oh my God, you know, this thing happened. I read this book and it changed my life. I'm sure I read a ton. I live in the Bay Area. You know, every third person has an enterprise software company. Mm-hmm. I've seen for years, decades even, how these models work. You know, it's subscription-based, it's seat licenses, it's, you know, enterprise size engagements. And so I've had a lot of exposure to it. So I guess that, you know, the one word answer to where this came from, osmosis.
Yeah.
It just soaked into me. And I'm sure, you know, I'm a subscriber to a million things too, as I'm sure you are. You know, I subscribe to, you know, every streaming service available, and I subscribe to music services, and you know, I subscribe to all the business software tools that we use internally. And, you know, I subscribe to our CRM and sales support. And, you know, I've got all of these subscriptions. So it was out there for me to be inspired by.
Yeah. Osmosis is a great way to put it. And as much as I talk about this, I haven't actually used that term before, but, you know, I think there might be a correlation between lack of hair follicle and absorption of osmosis ideas. For those that I'm still trying to get I have a strategy to get the videos of these podcasts out there eventually. But those of us who haven't seen the image yet, depending on when you're listening, Layla and I, we go to the same barber, let's just say. So that is a great way to put it, right? Because I think about this stuff all day. So I have been able to sort of deconstruct some of that osmosis. But at the end of the day, there wasn't really a light bulb moment for me either. It was just like all these things coming together. We scratched the surface a little bit about what you could do to outsource your VAs, what you can outsource to a virtual assistant. But tell me, like this is, I kind of do want to hear like the elevator pitch now. Like,
yeah.
Why would somebody like sign up with Augmentor?
Yeah, thanks. So. You know, we have a saying over here, which is that if you don't have an assistant, you are the assistant, because you're doing all the assistant work by yourself at whatever your effective billable rate is. So, you know, if you're an attorney, you have an hourly rate, you know, and let's, for the sake of conversation, let's say it's $500 an hour. You're billing $500 an hour and you spend, you know, 2.5 hours working on your email newsletter. Well, you know, that's $1,250 newsletter. Like, why would you do that? The kinds of services that we provide are the things that most business owners and busy executives shouldn't be doing by themselves. That's what we do. And, you know, we send these little notebooks to our clients, our prospects, really. And we say, hey, throughout your day, or ideally throughout your week, make a list of everything you do. And next to the things that someone else could do, put a star. And when you've got a full notebook, give us a call, because those are the things that you shouldn't be doing. You shouldn't be resizing images. You shouldn't be posting to social media. Not that you shouldn't use social media. It's critical. But come on. I mean, this is not why you got into business. This is not what your practice area is. It's probably not even what you do for fun. I mean, let's free your time up to be strategic, to offer your clients a ton of value, and for you to do the things that you love, whether it's working on your business because you love that, or spending time with your family, or, you know, practicing golf or whatever. Like, your time is worth something. And unfortunately, you're not getting any more of it. We're all on the same path. We have a set number of hours in our lives, and those hours will never, ever come back. So how do you want to spend your time?
Yeah. And you know, like the billable hour example for billable hour lawyers is sort of a no-brainer, right? It's just, and it gets to the point of, you know, where it, like, the sooner you could start outsourcing, if you have the clients, and you know, because that's where like a Fretzen type person comes in. If you have the clients, it makes sense as soon as possible to start outsourcing, because then you're just billing your time if you're a billable hour lawyer. So easy sell for VAs. Now, most of my listeners, hopefully, are moving away from that, or have already moved away from that. But something I like to talk about in my CLEs that I give are, even when you're not billing your time, it doesn't mean your time isn't valuable.
Right.
You're just not assigning a number to that.
That's right.
So like, if you're productizing your legal services and you have like everything else automated or outsourced to a VA, all you have to do is like show up to client meetings or show up to meetings with opposing counsel or a counsel on the other side of the negotiation table, or work strategically of what's another legal product that I could design and sell and outsource to a VA or another person to build the automation, because you don't even have to do that, right?
Right.
You become a pure strategy or like top value level provider at that point, right?
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, all of us have to go to networking events or conferences or, you know, the annual thing at the Chamber of Commerce or whatever. That's an investment in time. You should probably be doing that to build your business or build your practice.
Right.
But what comes from that? And I can tell you, in my case, when I go to a networking event, I'm meeting everybody I possibly can. Like, that's what I'm there for. That's how I know that it's been successful. But that, it doesn't end there. It doesn't end until those people that I've met are on my calendar for a conversation about how we might be able to work together. So I'm at a networking event, constantly throwing contact information over my shoulder to my assistant, who is standing by, and she sends out emails right there on the spot. So I might be talking to you, you know, over a cup of coffee at a conference, and you say, yeah, I'm interested in an assistant. Great. I shoot your contact information to her. Before you and I are even done having coffee, there's an email in your inbox that says, hey, understand you want to meet with Lael. Here's three times that work in the coming 2 weeks. Does one of those windows work for you? So you reply, yes, you're on my calendar, and then we've got a follow-up conversation. And then that's something. Then I'm making actual progress. Then the networking that I've done is actually yielding some result, some outcome. So it winds up being a good use of my time instead of just a use of my time.
Right. Right. So many lawyers who I know go to networking events and get a bunch of business cards and do zero follow-up.
Right.
None.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
So follow-up is one of the main things that I encourage people to use their assistance for. You know, sure, it's great that you got a business card. Now what? Or it's great that you talked to a prospect. What's happening with them? You know, if you don't close them on that first call, whatever your services are, whether you're, you know, in professional services or whether you're, I don't know, trying to make a deal with Whole Foods to get your, you know, wine on the shelves at all of the Western stores or something. Once you've had the meeting, great. But come on, like, that person has a million other things on their mind, just like you and I do. They right. need to be reminded that there's some next steps here. So right. get your assistant on that.
Yeah. All right. I'm about to throw a lot at you. So get ready.
I'm ready.
And then I'll get your perspective on it. So right now, when people ask me, oh, you're a true solo, right? Like, how are you a true solo, right? Because if you don't have an assistant, you are the assistant. And what I tell them right now is, technology is my assistant.
Yeah.
Because I automate everything I can. I go in and I build those automations. And, you know, instead, like where your assistant will message three times, like I will send a Calendly link that says, hey, here you go. And like the Calendly link takes care of it. Now, of course, right, the assistant can send the Calendly link. So you don't even have to do that. So like I see that part of it too. But I do tell people when like we start to strategize about building a law firm that even I am like planning to outsource in the future. Like once I hit a spot in my business where it makes sense for me to do that, like I could see like right now, what I like about not having an assistant doing everything myself is if I want to change like one of my Calendly automations, I sign into my account, I change the automation. But I can't imagine in the future, and I'm curious about your perspective on this, is I can like, well, I need a little bit more buffer time in between meetings. And instead of having to sign into my account, or even if I'm already signed in, go to the URL, go to the automation tab, click on that, do all that. I could just say, hey, VA, I need more automation time, right? And so like, it takes me 2 seconds instead of even only 2 minutes or 5 minutes. It only takes me 2 seconds. So I kind of answered my own question. But for people who are like, well, I don't need a VA because I have technology, you know, what's your response to that kind of a thing? When I went solo, I pivoted from mostly litigation to a transactional-only practice. I did not have a database of documents to automate. That's why a business and employment legal document database and automation tool like 650 is super useful. I can rely on the quality of the documents in 650's database since they're putting excellent legal minds to work curating and updating their documents and automations over time. When you're not billing by the hour, outsourcing and efficiency matters, and 650 can help you scale your practice to get high-quality documents drafted in less time. Use the code LAWSUBSCRIBED at 650.com and when being onboarded to get 10% off. If you're not a business and employment attorney or you have your own documents that you'd prefer to use, then my next sponsor, Gavel, is the automation tool for you. Gavel allows you to build shareable, client-facing workflow and document automations. In other words, Gavel helps you create a legal practice where attorneys can monetize the value they bring clients in productized form and scale via subscriptions and flat fees. Use the code LAWSUBSCRIBED at gavel.io to get 10% off an annual subscription. There's no one right way to automate and scale your practice, but with one or both of my sponsors, 650 and Gavel, you can take your subscription law firm to the next level. Links to both in the show notes. Now back to the show.
Well, yeah, so technology is amazing and absolutely critical, and I'm a huge fan of using it the way you're using it. So I think it makes a lot of sense. There's, you know, there's good automation tools like Calendly and HubSpot, and you know, there's terrific CRMs. I hope you're using a CRM to you know, keep track of your prospects. The short answer is eventually you're going to want to be using that technology and have a human person who can also support you. And the example that I'll give is your human assistant is dynamic and can respond to a variety of situations that Calendly just can't. So, you know, sure, Calendly is great for seeing when someone's available, getting yourself onto their calendar. It sends reminders, which are super helpful. I think it's a great tool. But if the person then says, oh, hey, you know what, last second, I'm actually going to be in the car. I'm not going to be available to Zoom with you. Can we switch this to a phone call? Calendly can't handle that. Like there's no setting for that. Or if instead of a Zoom or a phone call, you're meeting somebody for coffee and you need actually 30 minutes of buffer time instead of 5 minutes of buffer time because you have to actually drive somewhere and park and get in there and make your coffee order and then you have to get back. Calendly can't do that. Now, sure, you can make some settings or whatever, but you're way better off with an actual human being who you can say, hey, you know what? This one's actually a coffee meeting. So please bake in some travel time there. Move these two that were adjacent, that were going to be within the driving envelope, push those back, see if they could do another day. So there is a tremendous advantage to having a human. And this is actually a kind of a good moment to transition to the question that I always get, which is, well, what about AI?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how long before this is replaced by AI? And the short answer is, maybe eventually it will be replaced by AI. I mean, there's some interesting stuff happening right now, but we are nowhere near where we need to be for AI. So Calendly and AI actually have a whole lot more in common than AI and human assistants have in common at this point. AI is not dynamic. AI cannot anticipate your needs. AI can do the routines that you code it to do, absolutely, and some of it's really powerful, but we're not at a place where AI can actually take the place of a human. It's just not there yet.
Yeah, I could think of like some solutions to like kind of handle some of those issues you were talking about with like Calendly, right? But it's going to require that when you look at your Calendly, you're going to have 100 different types of event types, right? And now you're going to have to manage all of those different types of event types, right? And so like having somebody whose job it is to do that for you instead of now you having to manage all the unique event types in case of a coffee meeting and a this meeting and a that meeting. Because I think I'm up like 30 different types of event types now. And like, if I want to, they're not all the same buffer time and they're not all the same this. So like, if I want to make changes to one thing or uniformly, like I have to go manually in there and change all the buffer times, right?
Right.
And I'll even give you a real world example. And here's an answer for you that you could give, you know, if anyone asks you this again, is just because the technology does it, doesn't mean the other person is going to use it right.
Right.
Like yeah. You could opt to use this feature or not, but Calendly lets you, I didn't mean for this to become a Calendly advertisement, but it lets you include in the booking a reschedule link.
Yeah.
And so somebody could just reschedule right there. But what happens if they ignore it or they just cancel? Right. Like they might cancel and email you again. And hey, you know, I canceled it because I need a new time. It's now that reschedule link is null and void because they canceled the meeting.
Right.
So it doesn't work anymore. And I like to use one-time use links. So you click it, you schedule it once, because I don't want people to have access to my whole calendar.
That's
so
right.
So now I have to go back to Calendly, get the one-click use link, which, by the way, if you're on Calendly.com, they don't make it easy for you to get that link. You have to be like in one of their plugins or something to like get access to the copy single use link. So like I have to like go on my device or be at my desktop or do something else. Versus if I could just like tell my VA or my VA is automatically notified of the cancellation and they're in my email inbox, which I want to get to in a second here, they could just do that. And
that's
I don't have to worry about it, right? So like that's just another perspective that I'm having on this. Really, this is, I almost feel like this is an intervention for me, Lael, to just convince myself to get a VA.
Well, you know what I'm hearing is you spent a lot of time setting up 30 different types of meetings, you know, in that software. And your wheels are already turning about how you're going to, you know, solve these problems. I spend zero time thinking about that stuff because I've got somebody else on my team who just does it. She just does it. And, you know, maybe you're into it. Like some people get really into it. Like, I mentioned HubSpot earlier. HubSpot's a really powerful marketing automation tool. Some people get really into geeking out on it and they'll just go down a rabbit hole and they'll spend 2 weeks in there, you know, configuring different settings and different conditions and tagging and, you know, managing lists and all of this stuff. That's not how I want to use my time. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's 1,000 things I would rather do than that. So if like me, you don't actually want to spend your time figuring out how to like, you know, hack together pieces of software to do something that, you know, a $20 an hour employee could handle for you. Yeah. I mean, there's a solution.
Right. Right. So I teased a little earlier about like having a VA in your email. So this has been a movement that I've heard in the legal profession of like getting out of your email. Now, one of the ways that I do this is I try to only communicate with my clients on client specific matters in my client portal through the messaging in the client portal. Yeah. And that reduces my email significantly. But it doesn't get rid of email. So like, are you putting any VAs, are any of your customers asking their augmenters VAs to be in their email inbox? And how are you all handling that?
It's complicated. I'll say that. It's probably the most complicated thing we face. Yes, you should have somebody else managing your email. Email is, you know, is an outsourced to-do list. You know, you're inviting people to put themselves at the top of your priorities. And it's a massive time suck, but it is absolutely a critical business tool and you cannot do without it in the professional environment right now. Like there's nothing else like it. You have to have it. There are a number of different ways to address email using an assistant. The obvious one is, just give your assistant access. Let them get in there. They can fire off responses to the stuff that's not super high priority. They can let you know what stuff absolutely requires your attention. I'll say this, almost everybody struggles with that. It's people's ego is tied up in their inbox. And I don't mean ego like they think they're terrific. I mean like their identity. Their inbox is their identity. And they don't want to give up the keys to their email to an assistant on their team. So we've got a number of ways for people to step into that, to get comfortable with it. Some people forward emails along. So they'll go into their email, they'll spend half an hour every day sorting their email. They'll just block a time. Hey, every day from 8:30 to 9, I'm going to get in my email and I'm going to shoot off the stuff that can be handled by somebody else to my assistant. I'm just going to forward it along. Some people go a step further and they set up filters that will automatically forward email to the assistant for them to deal with. Some people mirror their inbox. So everything that goes into their inbox also goes into the assistant's inbox. And that way they don't have to totally give up their access to the email. So there's all of these different tools and strategies for people to get comfortable with that. And no two clients are the same. So we work with clients to get them to a place where we're going to be able to take the burden off of them in a way that feels good and allows them to maintain the level of control that they need to maintain.
Something you mentioned there, it's time blocking, right? That's a great thing to outsource to a VA, right? At the end of every day, I have 30 minutes that I have time blocked. Like after we put the kid down to bed, I spend some time with my wife and I go back to the computer to try to time block my next day. I don't always get there. I try to get there, you know, and, you know, calendaring and scheduling, that's like the number one thing you could outsource to an assistant or a virtual assistant, right?
But like so good.
How you do it though, the time blocking aspect of it, like I'm thinking now, like, I wish I had a software solution for this that does it the way I want to do it, but I haven't found it. It doesn't exist. It must not be high priority enough for startups to create like time blocking software. But a human's going to be really good at doing that, right?
Super good at it. Yeah. It's really a no-brainer for a human assistant.
Yeah. All right. We were talking way more than I thought we'd have to cover on this subject. So we got to sort of rapid fire some of these things. So you'll see in the show title and the show notes, Augmentor is spelled O-G. Mentor, pronounced Augmentor. I love the name. It's very clever because it augments, you know, what you do. But if I hire a VA through Augmentor, like where are they located? Are they in the US? Are they in other countries? Like where are they?
At this point, 100% of the team is in the Philippines. There's certain advantages to working with the Philippines. The short answer is excellent, fluent, fluid English. So, you know, everybody in the Philippines that goes through the education system, which is everybody on my team, speaks fluent English. They're also culturally very aligned with the US, so often fit into teams much more effectively than some other countries, which are more aligned with the UK or Australia or sort of other English-speaking countries. And then third, there's really a culture of care in the Philippines. They're a very caring people by nature. Now, of course, that's a generalization and you know, you can't say any group of people is always this way, but I'll say anecdotally, where I live in California, that the hospitals are absolutely full of nurses from the Philippines because there really is that culture of caring for people. And being an assistant is like being a nurse looking out for people. So we love the Philippines. We may expand into Latin America as well in time, but right now the team's in the Philippines.
And then, so if they're in the Philippines, from what I've learned about like this industry is that's where like arbitrage comes in, right? Because like the cost of, because if you're thinking, if you look at your prices and your prices are always subject to change, so you can mention them if you want, but I realize that sometimes they change, you know, part of the reason you're able to charge what you're able to charge is because of where they're located and cost of living and all that. So arbitrage comes into there, but also time arbitrage, right? So like we talked about one version of time arbitrage, which is you could spend your time doing other things, but also they are on a very different clock than us, right? So like literally when you're sleeping, right? Like this is one of the benefits of using VAs from other countries in different time zones is you're sleeping and they're working because it's like during their day, right? I mean, do I have that right?
Yeah, you have that absolutely right. We work with clients who have all sorts of different time requirements. Most clients like to overlap at least part of their day with the assistant so that they can communicate directly, whether on a Zoom call or using something like Slack, definitely emailing. but they don't have to overlap 9 to 5. The time difference from California to the Philippines is 15 hours. They're 15 hours ahead. So they live in the future. From the East Coast, it's 12 hours. So you can literally just flip AM and PM. It's pretty easy math. But yeah, we find assistants who are willing to work the hours that our clients need. We've got some clients who do have people on the overnight shift, and that's great. We have other clients who actually need round-the-clock support. And so they've got 3 full-time assistants, each on 8-hour shifts that, you know, they got 100% coverage. But we make it work. We make the time zone work to our clients' advantage. Oh, you asked me about pricing also. I'm super transparent about pricing. Prices are always on the website. So if you go to augmentor.com, O-G-M-E-N-T-O-R.com, and you click on the Get Started button, you'll see the prices. I'm not at all shy about sharing them. To your point, though, this podcast is evergreen, so they change. But suffice to say, they're 20 to 30% of what you would pay for an equivalent assistant here in the U.S. So you can imagine tremendous savings.
Right. Regarding employment status, so from like an employment law perspective, like yeah. I just contract with Augmentor, or are they right. a 1099 contractor? How does that work?
Yeah, you contract with us. It's, you know, it's no different from hiring an accounting firm to handle your bookkeeping. You're not hiring that bookkeeper. You're not putting them on your payroll. You're not providing benefits or, you know, going through any of the legal employment challenges. You're just hiring a firm to do a service. The service that we provide is assistance. We're assistance as a service. You pay us as a vendor, and then we've got an employment relationship with the assistants. We've got overseas payroll and take care of all the paperwork and all that stuff.
And the benefit of that is like you have an assistant who like has to stop working for you. You could just slot in another assistant into that space instead of having to start the hiring process all over again.
That's correct. And that's another reason why we assign a manager to every account, because in the event that we do have to replace the assistant, which happens sometimes, that manager has enough exposure to the client that they can train the new assistant and get them up to speed really quickly.
Excellent business model. I didn't put that together. That's really something. In the little time we have left, I'd like to bring up AI for one more time.
Yeah.
Because, you know, at least I think, and I just had there's an article published in the ABA GP Solo magazine where I make this point, is what's nice about AI is everyone has an assistant. Even your assistant has an AI assistant now. And if we yeah. all use it, we all 10x our productivity. And so, like, I don't see it, my perspective is very optimistic, right? I don't see it replacing anybody. I just see it making everybody more productive. But you also had a really nice analogy that I liked in our pre-show talk about AI. So why don't you give my audience your perspective on AI?
Yeah. So AI is a tool, and used well, it can be incredibly helpful. And the analogy that I like to give is AI is like a piano. If you have a piano, that's great if you know how to play it. If you don't know how to play it, it's a mess. Like, you know, we've all heard people sit down to play the piano who don't know what they're doing, or, you know, kids learning how to play the piano. It's a racket. I mean, you don't want that sound in your house, but somebody who's truly trained how to play the piano can really make some beautiful music with it. It's the same with AI. If you know what you're doing, if you're trained on it, if you work at it, you can use it as an effective tool. And if not, it's certainly not going to replace you. If anything, you end up with a worse thing than if you would have just written something yourself, or video edited yourself, or, you know, modified an image yourself.
And then the question related to your business is, are your VAs presently, or will they in the future, be trained on using AI? Because I expect law firms or potential clients might want that.
The answer is yes. We have guidelines around when it's appropriate to use AI, how to use AI. We really believe strongly in disclosing when AI is used. There are specific AI tools that we like and that we train on, some text-based stuff like ChatGPT, but we also really like this video editing tool called AugX, which is a super powerful way to very quickly crank out videos. So that's something that we use when we're supporting people on social media or you know, editing a podcast or something. You can run it through a generator like this and come up with a really terrific finished product.
Even Canva has started introducing AI right in their tool.
That's right.
Well, with that, Lael, my final question for you that I ask of all my guests, is a hot dog a sandwich and why?
So this is a debate that I have with my children. Also, I can definitely argue either side of this, but for today's conversation, I'm going to say, yes, it is a sandwich because it is filling, surrounded by bread. I think what makes a sandwich is its portability, as well as your ability to eat it without making a mess. That's not to say you couldn't make a mess eating a hot dog, but I'm of the opinion that a hot dog is a sandwich.
All right. That was a very well thought out answer. So I feel like, yes, you must be having these debates with your children. Lael, if people wanted to follow up with you or get in touch, what's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah. So best thing to do is to visit the website, O-G-M-E-N-T-O-R, augmentor.com. There's contact info there. You can also get yourself into my calendar that way. We've got some tools on there that allow you to schedule an appointment with me. We're also available on all of the social media platforms. Super active on LinkedIn. You can find me. You can find Augmentor. You can also get to us through, you know, the Facebook family, Instagram, WhatsApp, you name it. We're not hard to find.
All right. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, Matthew. This was fun.
And that's our show. Thanks again to 650 and Gavel for being sponsors. The best way for others to discover this show is for you to share it with somebody you think would find value from it. Follow me on LinkedIn, since that's where I'm most active on social media, and click the bell towards the top right of my profile to get notified about all of my posts about this podcast and everything else I think is valuable for you to see. To get in touch, message me on LinkedIn or email kurbis@lawsubscribed.com. All links are in the show notes. Until next time, this is Matthew Kurbis with Law Subscribed.